Thanks for listening to the Dusty and Cam podcast, brought to you by Les Schwab Tire Centers. It'll be the best 45 minutes of your life, I promise. Doing the right thing since 1952.
Well, good morning, Portland. It's just about time to get your day started right here with Dusty and Cam on 1080 The Fan. We'll get up and get started. It's time for Dusty and Cam. Just around 6, shower, shave, and coffee. It's time to get that sports fix. Bring a case of the Mondays, then there's Would You Rather, just a little bit of awkward. So tune in live today. It's Dusty and Cam.
Which one's crusty and which one's dusty?
My sports package is huge now.
Where are you at, brother?
Hornswoggled, befuddled.
I'm ready to crush your dreams in the morning.
Lighten up, Cam.
You don't even have a barn.
Would have built one just for you.
You'll love your dog.
Love you.
It's time for Dusty and Cam.
We've got to bifurcate those two things.
Good morning, happy Monday to you, the 26th of October, 2020. Dusty here, Cam Cleland. Good morning, Mr. Cleland.
Hey, good morning. You know, isn't it amazing how just one weekend can change your whole perspective?
What do you mean?
I mean, just your whole perspective. You get a little bit crisp and cold in here. Love it, by the way. Whether your team wins or loses, we do know we're only 2 weeks away from the Pac-12. Watching the other college football teams, you win or lose. You know, hey, Nebraska fan, you're Ohio State fan, you're a Penn State fan, but then you're a Dodgers fan. One day doom and gloom, the next day, oh, we're back. It's over. It's great about baseball because you could always have the next day. You always play more. Football, you got to sit in your dirty diaper for a week if you lose. But then you get Monday, and Monday's that shining light of, all right, this is where we dump everything. Just let it out. It's going to be okay. We have your case of the Mondays today, right?
That's right.
We do. You can let us know at 7:45. Mm-hmm. And then there's nothing like that emptying of the garbage on Monday. It's like a restart. It's like every Monday is just like a restart.
Yeah.
I love that about football.
I think what you're missing in all of this is that you get to dump it on Monday, but that's not going away anytime soon. You said it. You sit in your dirty diaper for a full week. It's a nice time to unload and just know you're not alone in your misery, because half of the NFL is sitting in misery as well.
You could be a Patriot fan this morning.
Shut up.
You could be a Patriot fan this morning. You could be a I told you so fan like I did, and told you that the San Francisco 49ers
were going to
go into New England and kick the crap out of them, and you two guys didn't believe me. Oh, no, the aura of Bill Belichick and Cam Newton are just going to get it. Like, no. No,
wait,
no, no,
when
no,
did that
no.
conversation happen?
Yeah, it happened on Friday.
I don't remember that conversation.
You two, both of you on that it happened on Thursday. Didn't take it. Didn't have any trust in your teams. Actually, you trusted New England.
Oh, I've never been happier to be wrong. I thought that the Niners were going to get the doors blown off them, and it was just the opposite.
See? Yeah. Got to trust in it.
Thought Bill Belichick was going to have his guys going. Are we ready to admit that the NFC or AFC East does not run through New England anymore?
It's not like Buffalo looks spectacular. It looked okay. It looked good. It looked all right.
Field goals against the Jets.
It looked all right. I mean, it was the Jets. At some point in time, I'm like, Buffalo's going to lose this game to the Jets.
Yeah.
And Miami's going to win this division.
They've got a 3-game lead on New England.
Yeah. Well, look. We'll find out.
Whoa.
We'll find out.
In New England, in third place, the defections on the defensive side are finally starting to show, because it was like, look, you
guys
can
are playing
come out,
hard.
You can play is out of your minds at the beginning, but then you're going to sit there and be like, oh, wait a minute. Six starters are out on the defense for the New England Patriots. At some point, is that going to catch up to them? And it has.
Does your whole week's mood base on your team's win or loss for the weekend? That is the question. As we get into the season, because if you're a Jets fan, every week is just like, God. Or you've at this point where you're going, all right, Trevor. We really like it. Although I watch Sam Darnold and I go, he's pretty good. Just didn't have anybody. He's pretty good. And then here's the part that you want to hear from every fan or every analysis of a team when you're losing. Guys are playing hard. Guys are playing hard. Then you watch the Cowboys and go, guys aren't playing hard.
Ugh.
Guys have quit.
Yeah.
Like, shut it down. They're
Mike
already
McCarthy's
planning their.
Got a disaster on his hands.
They're planning their vacations. Their wives are already scheduling what it's going to be like in their second homes. The kids are like, well, I guess we got to go to the online school in Arizona.
I don't know, man. I think that fans would rather. I don't want to hear the they're playing hard and they suck.
You do if you want to keep your job, but fans and analysts guys want to do that.
I'm talking about fans aren't worried about keeping a job. If you're a fan, you want nothing to hear of, guys are playing hard. No, so they're playing hard and they still suck. Okay. Like the Cowboys, it's like they're not playing hard and that's a reason why they suck.
Well, one reason the Cowboys have gone just dead last. This is the one reason, and this will be the reason that I stick with the rest of my life as long as I'm upright, breathing, and I can talk about football.
Ben DiNucci is their quarterback.
No.
Oh.
No. No. No.
That'd be a reason why they suck.
The cornerstone of your ability to fight, win, or do anything in this league, from any football program, from Pee Wee all the way up to the NFL, is the, stay with me here, this is proven true, offensive line. You have lost every starter on your offensive line. You have ham sandwiches, Frescas, and maybe a current crush. I might be doing a little bit too much. Maybe I go with a Diet Pepsi. That's what you have on your offensive line. No experience, no continuity, no versatility. You have great backs, great skill position guys, comparable quarterback, decent. There's a lot of decent. You have zero offensive line play. Can't win. Can't win at all. Zero. None. Zip. Nada.
Are those guys all great, or were they propped up by the best offensive line in the game?
No. Those guys are all great. All highly graded on Pro Football Focus, which is that interesting that we get to see that as part of the NBC broadcasts, that you get your ranking when you're introduced? How does that make you feel, do you think, as a player? Like, oh my God, 55. If you watch the Seahawks secondary, every guy was like 40 and above, according to Pro Football Focus.
They're
like,
terrible. But
grading you—that is degrading grading. That's degrading grading.
This is where you sit there and you go, okay, were those guys propped up? Like Ezekiel Elliott, he's a good running back.
No, he's an excellent running back.
He's a really good running back, but
can't do anything with no offensive line.
At the same token, you know, are there guys that have done more with less? That you sit there and you look across the National Football League and you go, dang, that dude doesn't have that sort of offensive line, and he's putting up numbers that are comparable to Ezekiel Elliott.
Probably, but the exception of certain teams that have no expectations. When you're the Dallas Cowboys, your expectation coming into the season would be Super Bowl contenders, and you can't win without an offensive line in Dallas when you have a top-end back. When your back is your center focus, he is your center focus. He should be your focus of your offense.
Like, what do we think of, like,
can't do it?
See, because this is, and the reason why I ask that is that I go, like, a guy like Kenyon Drake, right? Kenyon Drake has put up productive numbers year in and year out behind Miami, and now Arizona.
Yeah, but different scheme. Like
of course, different scheme. And that's what makes it so impressive, is that his offensive lines aren't great. His scheme, especially now in Arizona, it's not beneficial to be a running back, and he's third in the NFL in yards. Kenyon Drake is.
You can't make up.
In Arizona.
Right, and Kenyon Drake can play, and hopefully his injury isn't too bad.
Yeah.
We'll see. I saw the reports, that maybe it's just an ankle MRI. I don't know about what the full diagnosis, and that's good that there wasn't anything broken in x-rays. I think that's what it was first. That's the rumor out. But you can't win football games without an offensive line. You're never going to be able to produce anything. 7-on-7 looks great. It looks sexy. It's interesting. It's fun to watch points. Just every team, over and over again, we see it year in and year out. You cannot do anything when you have bad offensive line play. Hey, at least we'll talk about the Seahawks all day today. But their offensive line was okay. It's okay. It keeps them in the game. It's all right. It's not spectacular. Dwayne Brown on the left side, some solid players. Can't do anything if you have bad offensive line play.
Well, they're doing a whole heck of a lot offensively.
Sure are.
It's their defense that can't stop anything.
Yeah.
All right, we've got a lot to get to today. Our P1 Social, the Seahawks fall in the desert. What are the glaring holes that need to be fixed with Seattle? Because I think more and more holes are starting to pop up with the Seattle Seahawks. It's not as easy as just saying they're secondary anymore. especially after coming off the first loss of the season for the Seattle Seahawks. 503-250-1080. We'll go all around the world of football, including Justin Herbert picking up his first win as a pro. Who's the best team in the NFC right now? Those questions need to be asked. We'll have our wide right, the mishaps, miscues, and blunders from the weekend in football. And the a common theme throughout wide right, when the offense actually isn't supposed to score. It happened a few times this weekend in college football. Yeah, the offense not supposed to score. It kind of sounds counterintuitive, but it happened this weekend across college and pro football.
You know what else we got this weekend? Snow game.
Yeah, we got our first snow game of the year.
Is that the earliest snow game that you can remember off the top of your head?
In the NFL?
No, just in general. Like, I remember a Halloween in high school. I had a snow game as a JV player. I think when I was a sophomore, I distinctly remember it being in like 90, somewhere in there. And I remember, oh my God, it never snows in high school.
Yeah, I'm trying to think.
I can't, it's like that was early. It was early snow.
And honestly, I don't really keep track in my mind when snow games happen.
But when it happens, it's like, there it is.
I will say
all
that
the things, there it is.
Before Halloween is definitely a shocker.
Yeah.
Like
yeah,
that is, that's what it's, I not, think. It's not supposed to, this is no. Like when fall, the leaves are supposed to be on the ground. It's not supposed to be snow time.
Right. We haven't even lost all the leaves.
Yeah.
I haven't even done it.
All right. We'll have our case of the Mondays. What's grinding your gears? I've got a doozy that happened over the weekend. So case of the Mondays coming up at 7:45. And then our NFL rapid fire. We will go through every single game for you. The listener out there. Where we start, though, we might have seen the best finish to a World Series game in quite some time on Saturday, but the Dodgers, they reclaimed control last night. Dusty and Cam on the Fan. What a great weekend of World Series baseball. I know Monday we usually just react to football, but World Series was awesome over the weekend because, I don't know, game four on Saturday night, that may have been the most exciting finish to a World Series game since, I don't know. I mean, my goodness. Was it game seven between the Cubs and Indians, probably?
Probably.
That game seven, Cubs and Indians?
How it ended? Dribbler to third?
The Cubs and Indians game.
Yeah.
But we had on game four on Saturday night, we had the first time since 1988 that a team won with a walk-off hit with two outs while trailing in the World Series. And that was Kirk Gibson's pinch hit walk-off homer. And what we saw with Brett Phillips knocking in Rosarena, that was the first time that had happened since 1988. Two outs, walk-off hit while trailing.
My first thing when Brett Phillips hit that ball, I went, you know what? It clicked to me for a second. I was like, wait a minute. I know this guy. And, of course, I don't follow enough of Tampa Bay during the year. And then I watch him, and I start to see him, and he comes in. He's playing. I was like, wait a minute. I know this guy. It's like, I've seen him do other things before. You don't remember when he was on the Brewers and when he was the laughing stock of the Brewers because they made fun of him because of his laugh, because his laugh is a honk laugh.
Yeah.
Have you ever heard of it? He's hysterical. He's one of those, one of the funny, nice guys. It's like, I can't breathe. It's the dead silent laugh, you know, the mouth open where there's no sound. And then all of a sudden it's like, it's hysterical. So I'm like, great for that guy. And by the way, he was so excited, he almost had a heart attack.
His post-game interview was great.
No, they were checking him on the bench to make sure.
I'm going
to
need a minute.
It was like, he's going to have a heart attack. He outraced himself. Okay, yeah. So congrats on that. It was a phenomenal game. This is what I'm going to start with this.
And he was 0-2 lifetime in the playoffs at that point.
Well,
Brett Phillips is 1-for-3 in the postseason ever.
It was great to see him do that. I love it when guys get big hits like that. I've never been in that situation. They step up. Crowd's going crazy. But here's my question for Dodger fans in Major League Baseball. And really, when you talk about loyalty to a pitcher, I understand there's loyalty. But it's not like Mariano Rivera with the cutter is on the mound. It is Kenley Jansen, who has shown and proven that throughout the playoffs, he is going to give up significant hits when he's called upon. And you're asking a guy to come in and throw a cutter at 92, which that's okay. Okay, at this point in time, there's only been one closer I've ever seen have a predominant one pitch and can get everybody out with that. And that's Mariano Rivera with his cutter, the way he did it. 92 was not intimidating. And Kenley Jansen, again, gives it up. So I asked this question of Dodger fans and Dave Roberts. Loyalty, schmoyalty, to the point when Gratterall throws 140 billion miles an hour, and every time he comes in, it seems like he gets the job done. What are you doing with loyalty to Kenley Jansen? What is the main reason you go away from Gratterall? Because your analytics tell you, Dave Roberts, because the loyalty of it is what I need to do, and you got the amount of pitching mistakes that that manager makes every time. Mm. It blows my mind that players don't sit around and go, okay, come on.
It happens all the time with him.
All the time.
I mean, and it we saw it again. I mean, even before that, I you know, when you have, Baez came in, he gave up two.
Yeah.
Trinan came in and gave up two earlier in the game. I mean, it's like, the bullpen is a roller coaster, and you never trust Dave Roberts to make the right call.
Well, Gratterall should be your closer. I know he's your setup guy. I think he's your future closer. Maybe not. Maybe they want to do something different. I think they're smoking. What I don't know what they're smoking down there. And Dave Roberts, if he's not your closer from here on out.
So you had two errors on that final play where Brett Phillips has that looper into center field. Yep. You had Taylor, who didn't field the ball cleanly.
Yeah, he was closing on it. He was trying to make a big play.
And he bobbles it there. But then you have another error on your catcher, Will Smith, who he went for the tag on a Rosarena.
Yeah, he got a little anxious.
And the ball gets by him. Question here, though. Kenley Jansen not only gave up the hit, but Kenley Jansen, where was he at backing up the throw to home plate?
He wasn't there yet.
Well, obviously.
Yeah, he wasn't there.
He would have been right. He should have been right in that spot where he would have.
Well, he wouldn't have been.
He would have backed it up.
Well, I don't think he would have been there. If you're typically, if you look for where the throw is, he would have been left side. He would have been backing up to the left with the angle of the throw because the ball ended up ricocheting right.
But here's the other thing, too. Would he have been? Because why did Max Muncy cut that ball off?
Yeah, that's a good. Because it was wide.
I mean, it was something that the catcher had to move back again and put himself out of position. He was sliding, and so it would have been like if Muncy doesn't cut that ball off, and then if Kenley Jansen is in his spot that he's supposed to be in. That may be a Rosarena. Maybe he's caught in a rundown right there.
But if Rosarena doesn't do his Daniel Jones tribute to Daniel Jones and Landshark it with two strides off of third, he's scoring anyway.
I know.
So it's, I mean, it
how
was
crazy was that?
It was, and watch Dave Roberts just flip out and everyone just goes, no way. It was one of those slow motion plays.
And then you
see that roller coaster of emotions of ISO cam on Dave Roberts was too good.
Yep. Yeah. And all I thought of was right after they won the NLCS and he said, this is our time. This is our year. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh boy, this could be the big momentum swing. And then last night, all of a sudden, the Dodgers slammed the door. That could have been an opportunity where the Dodgers just wither and the Rays just seize momentum and they never look back again.
Bounce back.
But the Dodgers came out, and when they put runs up early in that game and they got to Glasnow early, you were like, okay, here we go. You had this Betts right off the bat, leadoff double, boom. So and then Seager knocks him in, and you're like, okay, they're not going to let this happen. And hey, I give the Dodgers a ton of credit.
I would have never thought going into this game that you would get two times. You would face Glasnow twice, who was freakishly dominant in the playoffs. And Clayton Kershaw was going to go up against him twice, and he was going to knock him off in the World Series. Wouldn't even, I would have said 50-50 more of an 0-2. You're a betting man going into this scenario. Clayton Kershaw.
I think they would have split.
And then you try to steal home.
Margot. Then now
you
this
feel
is,
okay. free to steal home. That's what your coach is going to see. Your manager. Kevin, we allow
Kevin
guys
Cash
to
cash after the game because when Margot in the fourth inning,
feel free.
It was still a game. I mean, we were still. It was 3-2 at
runners
this point,
at first and third
in the fourth inning, and they get runners on first and third with no outs. All of a sudden, you get two outs, and Margot on third decides to go. Kevin Cash on why.
Yeah, you know, as a read, you know, I know Kershaw has the real high handset, whatever he does, and I think Manny just felt like he had a beat on it that he could time him up. You know, frustrating inning. First man on third, no outs. Then first and third, no outs. Pop up, strike out, and then get thrown out trying to do that. Ideally, we got to find a way to get that guy in to tie the game right there.
Yeah, ideally, you probably would, Kevin.
Yeah.
You probably would. I don't, like, that is a head scratcher among all head scratchers there. Why in the world?
I don't know why you would ever allow that. It hasn't worked since 1955. That's how long it's been. A straight steal. It's never worked. So
a straight steal at home or in the World Series?
No, just a straight steal at home. Straight steal.
Really?
Yeah.
1955 was the last straight steal of home?
We have not seen a straight steal from home.
Ricky Henderson never did that, huh? You would think that like a guy like Ricky Henderson would, huh?
I don't care how fast you are. You better be Casper the Ghost if you think that's going to ever happen. I mean, it's not even... I don't even know that's... Now, there's no way you could sit there and tell me that there's any shot in your mind as you're standing as a third base coach or a manager that you would even open that thought process up to a player. When he comes back into the dugout, you're going to look at him and go, what the hell are you doing?
Mm.
And the fact is, you give that kind of freedom to your players to be athletic enough to make a play. Yeah.
You got to like that as a player, but...
Do you? Maybe.
Well, yeah.
You need a little structure at third base, just a fraction.
It's like you're kind of important run, but
take the bat out of your player's hands. You don't take the bat out of a guy in scoring position ever.
Having that freedom is nice, but you as a manager would probably hope your guys are smarter than that to try to steal home with two outs in the World Series.
Not a good idea.
Down one run, and then you know momentum is a hell of a thing because what happened the very next inning. You know, Max Muncy hits just a moonshot and then he drops his bat like it's, you know, the little bat flips salad there. Mm-hmm. I loved Max Muncy. That is one thing that I'm loving about this postseason is the bat flips.
Yeah.
They are becoming more and more prevalent in baseball. And I think we're ready for it to be just commonplace now. I think the old curmudgeons are out. You don't see very many people complaining about them anymore.
No.
On social media either.
Yeah, they're just fine. Was it a bat flip, though, or was it kind of just a bat lay?
It was a drop, like a mic drop of your bat.
Correct.
He had it up high and just like
Ken Griffey Jr. used to do that all the time. The one-handed just and then drop it. Just gone.
Gone.
Just drop the bat.
And now Dodgers are in control. 3-2. Clayton Kershaw, we give him a lot of flack, right? The baseball world does.
He's got two wins, man.
Well, he's only wins. Major League Baseball's career leader in postseason strikeouts, too.
Mm-hmm. Got two wins.
But, I mean, 207. Nobody in Major League Baseball postseason history has struck out more batters than Clayton Kershaw. And he gets criticized for not being very good in the postseason. That's pretty impressive.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's a dealer, but when it falls apart, it all falls apart. Now the Dodgers, one game away, and they're off today. They'll be playing tomorrow. Game 6, Dodgers can finish off the Tampa Rays. All right, Seahawks fall in the desert. What are the glaring holes this team needs to have fixed? 503-250-1080. It's not just as easy as the secondary anymore. Here's Buck with SportsCenter.
Down here, it's our time. It's our time down here.
Every morning at 6:30, Dusty and Cam want to hear from you.
Went to the coast. We get together, have a few laughs.
It's time for Dusty and Cam's P1 Social.
Want me to drive?
No, I'll drive.
The time of the day where you drive the conversation.
Well, we're waiting.
Text Dusty and Cam at 503-250-1080 and get social with us.
This is your time.
On 1080.
Now go out there and take it.
The Fan.
503-250-1080. That to be the Fan text line. The Seahawks fall in the desert and in overtime last night to the Arizona Cardinals, 37-34, picking up their first loss of the season. And they've been playing tight ones all season long. It was unfamiliar territory for old Pete Carroll.
With so many things that happened, so much that happened in this game, we had all kinds of chances to win the football game, and we could have won it on offense a couple times and on defense a couple times and in overtime as well. And we weren't able to get the finish that we needed. You know, we've been finding that way on one side of the ball or the other to make the play, make the sequence happen, and we had our shots. And you know, we take such pride in finishing well and doing things right down the stretch and executing and making the other team have to out-execute us. It didn't feel like that tonight. It didn't feel like we were able to force that issue in our favor.
Now we got to ask the question, what are the holes that needs to be fixed in Seattle? I mean, you hear Pete Carroll, it's surprising they're not finishing on top of a close game because we're so accustomed to it. 503-250-1080.
Well, first off, you got to tip the cap to what Arizona was able to do with Kyler Murray and that whole organization and their guts to dump an entire coaching staff, dump a former first round quarterback that was a top 10 pick and invest in the best wide receiver and a young superstar who has done nothing but elevate that whole franchise, their whole attitude. They lose their best pass rusher. They go up against an undefeated team on a short week, by the way, who's coming off a bye week.
Yep.
Who's an MVP candidate with Russell Wilson and went toe-to-toe with him. And in the fact, not only went toe-to-toe with it, threw it all over the yard also. And the talent was there. And it was another great game. So the positivities of this with start is that Seattle's in every single football game. They are never out of a football game. They're not going to blow anybody out, and they're not going to get blown out. They're going to come down to a kick, overtime, whatever it takes, they're going to be there. But this is it. This is it right here from the start. Okay, Seattle got out-coached. It got out-coached offensively. It got out-coached defensively. It got out-coached special teams. All of it. That's what this team is lacking right now. The coaches for Seattle have to do better, significantly better, in two critical areas. Number one, the pressure downs on offense. The pressure downs on offense mean third and long, third and short. Those kind of situations that you're in, you have to get better on that. Now, whether it's Schottenheimer, what I did notice during this game, significant amount of times Russell Wilson was allowed to change the play at the line of scrimmage based on his perception of too deep or multiple players in the box. But Vance Joseph, a former head coach for the Denver Broncos, the hat goes off to him and what he did in the final stretch in the fourth quarter and in overtime to confuse and frustrate Russell Wilson to the point where he was panicking and making throws because the backs couldn't pick up protection. The offensive line wasn't sliding correctly. He did a great job. That's called out coaching. You watch. Now let's flip to the other side and talk about Ken Norton and what he did. As soon as you punted, there wasn't anybody on this planet that said this: Seahawks are going to win this game on defense. Everybody knew at minimum they were going to get a field goal to send it to overtime and or win it with a touchdown. That is the difference. I don't care. Those guys are good players. There's some good players on defense. They are getting out coached, out schemed in significant moments. But you're 5-1. If you want to poke holes in it, you're getting out coached.
This one here says Russ needs to stop throwing picks.
Well, oh, yeah, guys. Nice. Yeah.
Three interception game. Those don't happen very often for Russell Wilson.
No.
And I think if there's one thing that's encouraging from that game, it's like you found what the line is to where your defense finally busts. And it was Russell Wilson turning the ball over three times. Yeah. And that took overtime for the Arizona Cardinals to beat Seattle in that. I would say if there's, I guess, a silver lining for your defense, it's that they bowed their back in critical situations, including, you know, Buda Baker gets that big interception. I don't know how DK Metcalf ran him down. It was a freakish play. But the defense bowed its back in that situation. Four straight downs. They did not. That was the only thing they stopped all night from Arizona. Four straight downs right there.
Well, they've had those kind of stops throughout the year. They did it to Cam Newton. They did a couple others.
Sure.
But yeah, throwing three interceptions. Buda Baker played spectacular. That pick was a bad throw by Russell Wilson. But what is it about? What is it about Arizona and red zone turnovers by Russell Wilson in Phoenix? I don't know. It was a bad throw.
This one coming in from P1 Farley says, does it not feel like Seattle and Tennessee are the same team, just flip Derrick Henry and Russell Wilson?
I think Tennessee's better on defense.
Way better.
Yeah, I think the offensive line is better in Tennessee. I think they're a more disciplined team. But Russell Wilson is head and shoulders the only reason Seattle's not 1-6. That's it. There's no other. Hey, I mean, look, that play by DK Metcalf was the most incredible. I've never in my life seen a play like that watching football. I've never seen anybody run 22.6 miles an hour on a guy that already runs a 4.4. He hawked him down with a it must have been like a 12 or 15 yard head start.
Well, if you're ever wondering what a tenth of a second means in the 40-yard dash,
holy crap,
that is it. Because there's a tenth of a second difference between DK Metcalf and Buda Baker. Buda Baker runs a 4.4, and DK Metcalf runs a 4.3. And if you're wondering what the difference is, that's it. Right there.
Unbelievable play. One of the greatest hustle plays. I mean, I remember the Ben Watson play when he was with New England, and he chased down – was he chased down – oh my gosh, the corner from, you know, the corner for Denver in the playoffs.
Champ Bailey.
Thank you. Hawked him down from a wide angle like that. But he had angles. There was geometry involved.
And that's a corner and a tight end.
Yeah, it was a corner and a tight end. It's not like Champ Bailey was slow. There was no angles here. There wasn't geometry involved. This was straight. You know, the fastest point between two lines? Fastest line between two. Fastest between 2 points is a straight line.
There you go.
I get it. He just straight lined him.
And
incredible.
Well, it looked like Don Beebe running down Leon Lett, but it was
both flying.
It was a monster wide receiver running down a fast safety.
There should be like a Don Beebe award handed out annually to the guy who has the best chase down, and DK Metcalf just won it.
Yeah. You're exactly right. Well, and he actually reclaimed it after he lost it to Diggs for running him down and forcing the fumble in Seattle against Dallas.
It's good to see DK like turn it on like that, because obviously that play upset him a few weeks ago when he had that ball popped out against Dallas. And I mean, in addition to his incredible athleticism, it's a huge hustle play.
Yeah, you just can't get guys to do that. And even when they had and Moore got the hold, it was a great call. When I first saw it, I was like, how can a referee make a call like that? But it was a huge call because it was the right call.
Yeah.
Because it was blatant. It was just right out there.
I mean,
Tyler Lockett's block on Patrick Peterson, which hats off to Patrick Peterson. He played spectacular on DK. Shut him down, followed him all over the place. Tyler Lockett said DK, or I'm sorry, it was like Antonio Brown, who? I'm going to have a day. And talk about having a day.
That was a ridiculous catch. That
it was full of plays.
That Tyler Lockett had on that fourth down where in the end zone. That ball, first, the ball was perfect by Russell Wilson. I mean, it was only where literally his guy could get it.
First play of the game.
And then it was, what?
First play of the game, too. Remember the one-handed catch, first play of the game?
But then Tyler Lockett in the back of the end zone to drag his feet like that.
Oh, my gosh.
That is such a hard play. I don't think, like, he made it look easy. I don't think people really understand how hard that is, especially when where the ball is coming from, it's coming from behind him.
Right, and the officials,
it's
too.
Ridiculous.
I don't think this game was officiated well. I thought it was officiated very poorly. But they got a few good calls. They made them, but it was just, it felt very flaggy that it didn't need to be. The fact that they called that a touchdown and then huddled up to not call it a touchdown doesn't make any sense. And then now you have to waste your timeout to even do that. Stick with your call, because you got influenced by a bunch of guys bitching and moaning and saying that it wasn't a touchdown when you have the backup of it. So this wasn't won or lost with officials. This is won or lost on the fact that the Seattle Seahawks got outplayed by a team on short rest, and they schemed the best quarterback right now, one of the best quarterbacks, if not the best quarterback playing, because he's up, he's even with Peyton Manning with touchdown passes right now to set the record. If you saw that stat. Just
Seahawks through
defense.
The first six games of a season, that is. Mm-hmm. Russell Wilson, 22 touchdown passes is equal to it. Peyton Manning's record for most touchdowns through six games. Seahawks lose last night in overtime, 37-34, their first loss of the season. Also, it was the first time that the Seahawks have lost since Russell Wilson's rookie season when they lead by at least 4 points at halftime. They were 59-0 before last night, and they watched it just disintegrate. What are the glaring holes that need to be fixed for the Seahawks team? 503-250-1080. Dustin Cam on the Fan. All right, the Seattle Seahawks fall in overtime, 37-34, 503-250-1080. That'd be the Fan text line. What are the glaring holes that need to be fixed? Want to hear from you. 503-250-1080.
And we've got one here coming in that says the Seahawks defense looks old and slow. Mm. It's going to require an entire defensive overhaul to correct, starting with the next draft.
Yeah, this is brutal what they're going through right now. They're giving up 479 yards per game, and I think we have a big enough sample size to say the secondary is just not good. 368 yards per game through the air. This defense is broken, and it's not just the secondary's problem because they have zero pass rush, too. Kyler Murray dropped back 46 times, and they didn't get to him once.
Not at all.
Or 48 times.
I've looked at this film multiple times, watched the game in certain situations, in lineup and in settings. Certain settings within the red zone, settings within third down, situations, critical situations. Watching that Griffin was the spy and how they brought him from the outside to the inside to try to help against Kyler Murray. I'm sorry, guys. This is a scheme issue. This is a major scheme. Heels at 10, okay? Heels at 10 in the red zone. When you're sitting on the 10-yard line, you give up a quick slant. Heels at 10. Don't understand that. That is a scheme and adjustment situation. Too deep look in the free safety. Okay, Kyler Murray looks at you. Both linebackers set where? Outside the tackle box. Nobody in the middle of the field. Kyler Murray goes, fine, we'll just do a quick quarterback draw. I'll go right down the middle. Alignment and assignment. What does it take to have for be great defense? Alignment and assignment. If you're set up to lose based on your alignment and then your assignment is then to cover a guy in that scenario, I don't like it. I don't like how Ken Norton is putting this together. And this is also on Pete Carroll because you're supposed to be the guru. I don't like it.
Well, don't you think with those two guys and their backgrounds and their successes that they've had, if they felt they could do anything different, they would? I mean, it kind of, you kind of sounded like a, remember that was big Duck fan criticism 2015, 2016 is, oh my God, why are they so far off the ball? Well, part of the reason was that they just didn't have the dudes.
No, they're addressing their deficiencies by trying to play uncomfortable. So if you're, and this is, I could say, is that if you have D-Hop, you have a couple wide receivers, some good players, you think you're going to get beat over the top. So you're stopping every play from the big play. So what you're doing is you're giving up. You know the old prevent defense mindset? Mm-hmm. Is the only thing you're preventing is the other team from actually not scoring. Well, that's what you're trying to do and keep it in front. In fact, when you play a prevent defense for the Seahawks at this point, the only thing you're preventing is preventing from stopping them because you can't stop it.
Got a text here that says, the Hawks need a better play caller on defense. We have holes to fill, yes, but we got out-coached last night. Ken Norton needs to go. The offense is going to do what they do with Russ, but how do you blow that lead? Bad coaching is how.
Well, also, guys, too, you're missing the best tackler, you're missing the best cover guy, and you're missing the most impactful player, arguably, in the NFL right now with Jamal Adams. If that, when he comes back, is a huge addition, a monster addition. Just look at what little Buda Baker did for that entire defense. He was all over the place. When Jamal Adams comes back, it will change how the schemes right now, they're just holding it together.
Well, and I also think that, like, Buda Baker is a great example of Seattle has a glaring hole that, I mean, we're not really talking about right now because we don't know the severity of it, but Chris Carson leaving that game last night, and you had some big-time issues with pass protection as well late in the game. Last drive, Russell Wilson hadn't been sacked all night. He gets sacked twice on that drive because one of them you have a poor slide in your protection, and your running back just ran right past a blitzing linebacker right up the gut.
I don't care at any point in time if you're a professional and you get paid to do that. That mistake will be, you should be cut tomorrow. I'm not kidding you. That is inexcusable by a back to have that. And first of all, your scheme offensively, if you're sliding all the time, because that's how afraid you are on edge rushers, you're putting backs on pass rushing linebackers. You're supposed to be able to win occasionally one-on-one. They weren't winning at all. And Chris Carson's a great one-on-one blocker when it comes to pass protection. Mm-hmm. You didn't have it. And by the way, Bob Condotta reporting that Chris Carson's injury, not significant. Considered to be significant.
That's really good.
That seems big for the Hawks. This one coming in, I think this person is a little more optimistic. They say you turn the ball over three times, but you still get to overtime. Mm-hmm. That tells you something about this team.
Yeah, I agree. You know, you got to make a couple adjustments and changes, but this team will not get blown out. They will be in every game no matter who they play from here on out. They will be in every game. They'll be within one score. The separation factor is going to be, can the defense make a play when they need to? They made a nice interception with a bounce back interception off Kyler Murray, off the interception from Russell Wilson. Mm-hmm. You just, You got to fix a few glaring holes. Jamal Adams is going to be, it's just going to make a big difference. It really will.
Is it of concern, though, that, yeah, it did take overtime for Arizona to beat you, but they were on a short week, mm-hmm. and that's confidence. The best team you've played all year.
Yeah. No, Seattle hasn't beat a super stud
the
team.
New
they really
England
haven't.
The New England win does not look very good anymore.
Well, I mean, it was a good win. It was a good win.
Because Cam Newton looked like a world beater, and since then, he can't seem to play quarterback at all. He's, like, forgotten how to play the position. And then the other wins are over Atlanta, Dallas, Minnesota, and Miami.
Yeah.
I mean, Miami may be the best win right now.
I agree. I mean, if until you beat a team, you're going to get a chance to start to face some teams now coming up. Seattle's going to be on a run. Mm-hmm. They're going to have to and step up. They have no bye week to lean on. So you're going to have shut down the naysayers. But this is no matter who they play over and over again, I'll state this till the cows come home. You're always going to have a shot with Russell Wilson. You're just going to have a shot.
Question. Okay, now the justification of, you know, putting blame on Ken Norton and Pete Carroll, that's legit. But last night, how much of an equalizer was Cliff Kingsbury seemingly trying to botch that game as well? Because there were several instances where you say the coaching decisions and mishaps may have been a wash because Cliff Kingsbury, for whatever reason, doesn't take points right before the half mm-hmm. after the interception and goes for it on fourth down.
Yeah.
Has no idea what is going on at the end of overtime with that, or their first overtime possession with their clock management and several other clock management things like at the end of regulation where you're sitting there going, what is Cliff Kingsbury doing?
Well, that's why he has Vance Joseph on the other side. He's lucky to have a guy that's been a head coach. That's been a head coach in this league because Kingsbury's still learning.
He's brutal.
And yeah, those are what rookie head coaches do. They make mistakes, and you got to have guys on your staff that are helping him and doing that. And they made more plays, and mm-hmm. so that Vance Joseph. The more I watch him coach and with the schemes that he came up with, beautiful. Not just ingenious, just they had so much variation that confused the crap out of Seattle in the final stretch in the fourth quarter and in overtime.
Yeah.
They were spectacular. They created 9 guys up on the line of scrimmage, dropped them out, and brought different pressures from different angles. Russell Wilson was in panic mode. He couldn't make the right throw.
Well, and that's got to be alarming, too.
Yeah. Well, it's alarming.
He panicked. I mean,
you didn't have a running game anymore. Once Chris Carson went out, your running game was gone.
Mm-hmm.
It was gone. And so you knew, and they knew it, and Arizona took advantage of it.
503-250-1080. Seahawks suffer their first loss of the season. They're 5-1. They're in great shape in the NFC, but there are no longer any unbeaten teams left in the NFC. And the best team just might be figuring it out right now. Dustin Cam on the Fan.